Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, March 8th, 2014, episode 1063. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace which connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Amazon gift card when you get a loan. And by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster, easier, and cheaper. Post your job to 50-plus job boards with one click. Try ZipRecruiter for a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. That's ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at Gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. The Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet, home theater, smartphones, everything with a chip in it, all that stuff that's changing our world. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. 8888 Ask Leo. Or 888-827-5536. You got that? All right. Sometimes I say it so fast you can't write it down, but you know, you don't really have to write it down. You know what you should write down? Just the website. Everything's there. If you remember techguylabs.com, I'm the tech guy. These are my labs.com, you know, the laboratory. The phone number's there, a link to the chat room, which is a great place to go if you want to join the kids in the back of the class. We also have show notes from every show, audio, video, and text, and a room for you to comment. Question by question. So each question is chunked up into question, 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 question. And so if you have a comment or a thought about something I say, a lot of times I think people say, oh, there's another way or better way, or Leo, you're wrong. This is a great place to do it. And it's free. Absolutely free. And always will be, I promise. No subscription cost. It's paid for by our fine advertisers. Tech, and there's not, don't worry. It sounds like the whole page has dancing monkeys on it. No, it's not. It's very tasteful. TechGuyLabs.com. Interesting story in Newsweek. Newsweek, which left the newsstands, one of the nation's two oldest news magazines, Time and Newsweek, you know, they fought it out for decades. When I was a kid, you were either a Time family or a Newsweek family. It was kind of like that, right? Yeah, and we were a Newsweek family, so I grew up reading Newsweek. Left the newsstand, stopped printing editions a couple of years ago because, you know, the world's changing. Kept an online presence, but I don't think it was a particularly important online presence. They decided to come back to the newsstands this week for the first time. They're printing Newsweek again, and they launched with a blockbuster story that is everybody in the tech world is talking about and crazy about. It's on the cover of this week's Newsweek, and it is about Bitcoin. We've talked many times about Bitcoin, a cryptocurrency that is non-governmental, but in every other respect has kind of, it's very much like a governmental currency. It's imaginary. It's not printed on paper. It's printed on bits, computer bits. Being accepted for payment by a number of places. You can buy cupcakes in San Francisco, pizzas in some areas. I can use Bitcoin to buy stuff at Overstock.com. In fact, they've done quite a bit of business in Bitcoin. So, I mean, I think that's really, that's the measure of money, isn't it? Whether you can use it to buy something. What you can't do is pay your federal taxes with it. That's the big difference between Bitcoin and U.S. dollars. So the Bitcoin is kind of shrouded in secrecy. There's some people who are very bullish on it, say this is the future of currency because it is anonymous. And as we move away from cash is anonymous. A paper bill is anonymous. I can give it to you. There's no way of knowing where you got it from. And you could pass it on, and it can't really be traced very easily. It's anonymous. But credit cards are not anonymous. None of the electronic transactions we do are anonymous. They're, in fact, very much not anonymous. And there are people, some nefarious, but some just who prefer privacy, who like the idea of anonymous money. They don't want every transaction to be logged in a database where it can be searched by marketers or government, for that matter. And Bitcoin appeals particularly to them. Now, admittedly, the first uses of Bitcoin were buying drugs. There was a website called Silk Road, which is gone, in which you could buy almost all sorts of, you know, any kind of illegal thing anonymously. Even Silk Road was kind of anonymous. You couldn't get there from here. You had to know how to, it wasn't on the public web. It was on the dark web. And if you knew how to do it, you could get there. Well, Newsweek's cover story wasn't just about Bitcoin, but purported to have discovered the inventor of Bitcoin. Bitcoin was created roughly 10 years ago, something like that, by somebody who claimed to be named Satoshi Nakamoto. Everybody's pretty sure it was a pseudonym, not a real name. Could have been a person or persons. A few years after inventing Bitcoin, releasing it to the world, he disappeared, handed off the reins to the Bitcoin Foundation, a nonprofit group which fosters the use of Bitcoin, maintains the standards and the code and so forth, because it's programming, it's computer code that generates Bitcoin and it you know, allows you to store it on a computer and transact it over the internet. I don't know what to think about this. Leah McGrath Goodman, reporter for Newsweek, and a forensic team, pretty credible forensic team, claim to have found the actual person behind Bitcoin, and his name is Satoshi Nakamoto. And he lives in Temple City, California, Southern California, and has been for a while, hiding in plain sight. Now, there's three schools of thought on this. One, hey, it's great. Great reporting. She found him. Amazing. And who'd have thunk it? Then there's the second school, which is, that's crazy talk. It's completely fabricated. It's not believable. Why would somebody use his real name, a guy who's clearly into privacy and hiding, and why would he use his real name? Which is legitimate. There's also some they use as clues that this is a fabricated story that the police officer, because he called the cops when the reporter came to his house, the police officer who arrived said, knew what Bitcoin was, knew who Satoshi Nakamoto was, she says, knew how much he was worth because he has approximately $400 million in Bitcoin, we think, attached to his account. Not the guy she found, but whoever Satoshi Nakamoto is. So there's that second school of thought who say it's hogwash. And there's a third school of thought who say maybe it is him. She should never have revealed him because, you know, it's true now. He can't go out the door. There's being hounded by the press. And one of the reasons people thought this person might be hiding is because governments may not be too thrilled about him and his invention. And perhaps he's even at risk of getting arrested or worse. So I'm very curious. I don't know. I don't know even which camp I'm in. My initial reading of this was it was credible. And I thought it's true and pretty good reporting. I'm not convinced it's the right thing to do to out him, but this is what reporters do. It's investigative journalism. Satoshi Nakamoto gave a statement at first saying, I don't do that anymore, to the reporter, which is true. And then later went to the Associated Press office and says, not me, I didn't do it, I never did it. There's some good circumstantial evidence that it's him. There's no conclusive evidence. It's a very interesting story. And I don't know what to make of it. And it's just one more weird bit to this incredibly weird story of Bitcoin. At the same time this week, the CEO of a Bitcoin company was found dead in Singapore. She's 28 years old, an American, runs a Bitcoin exchange. The authorities say suicide, but perhaps not. Mt. Gox, which was the biggest Bitcoin exchange, went bankrupt And other Bitcoin exchanges have announced that they've been subject to massive thefts that have forced them to close their doors. there's one guy, I think, under indictment for Bitcoin embezzlement, and there's been a lot of Bitcoin theft. It's a wild story. And I don't really know what to make of any of it. But as Analog Kid in our chat room says, never a dull day in the Bitcoin world. What a story. I mean, we just all have to read on. 8888 Ask Leo. I'm going to the phones next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, rocking out. The tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-275-5536. What do you think of all this Bitcoin stuff? What a story. What a world we live in. Who would have thought 10 years ago that all of the conversation would be about an imaginary currency, a non-governmental currency that's taking the world by storm? Bitcoin, by the way, has some governmental hurdles. In the U.S., it's unregulated. But in Russia and China, both countries have put some restrictions on what you can do with Bitcoin. They don't allow the banks to deal in Bitcoin and so forth. So interesting. I don't know what it means. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. Kim Schaefer in for the world traveler, Heather Hammond, who is in Tanzania right now. But I'm glad you're here, Kim. Thank you.
Happy to be here.
And I take it we have, oh, look at that. We've got a ton of calls. Who should I start with?
Yeah. How about Ron in Boston? He has a question about updating the iOS on his iPad.
Thank you, Kim. Hi, Ron. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Ron. What's happening?
Hey, Leo. How are you? Nice to hear your voice.
I'm good.
Boy, you sound like you're next door. I'm calling from the other coast. How are you doing?
I love Boston. Boston's strong. Right on.
Certainly is. Thank you for saying that. I have a question about my wife and her iOS 6.
Yes.
She has an iPad, too. She likes the OS 6, doesn't want to upgrade to OS 7.
Yeah, don't blame her.
I have an iPad with the iPad with the OS 7.
Yes.
My question is, we know we had the problem, and we had the upgrade to 7.0.6,
right,
whatever.
Right.
Is she going to be affected staying at 6? I called Apple. They said it's not a big deal. But
really?
I don't trust that. Yeah, I listen to you more than I listen to Apple. What do you suggest?
It's not a big deal, they say.
Yes, that's what they said. Not a big deal.
Well, there is an update, and I presume that she is updated to 6.1.6, right?
That I can't tell you. I would think not, because every time we look...
It always says you want to be iOS 7, right.
Right.
Well, Apple did release iOS 6.1.6, which was to fix this so-called go-to-fail bug. Let me tell you what go-to-fail does. If it's unpatched, it allows anybody to pose as a secure website. So it allows something they call man-in-the-middle attacks. So you're out there on your iPad at a coffee shop and you decide you want to do some banking or buy something at Amazon. That is normally a secure transaction, what we call an SSL transaction.
Okay. So she only uses the Wi-Fi in my home, which is secured. Somebody would have to be
No, it doesn't matter because she has to go out of the Wi-Fi. So let's say you're at home using your Wi-Fi.
Yep.
I mean, the reason Apple said don't worry is because this is a little bit of effort somebody would have to exert. But here's how it could happen. She gets clicks on a link that she thinks is taking her to her bank, the Boston Bank. And she goes to the Boston Bank. It looks like a secure site. It's got the SSL lock, the key, it all looks good. Except that she's not going to the Boston Bank. She's going to an intermediary site that looks just like the Boston Bank and pretends it's the Boston Bank. But see, the Apple Safari on the iOS does not verify the certificate and just goes, yeah, I'm sure you are the Boston Bank. You say you are, so I believe you. Now, he could continue to pass along the transactions so that the Boston Bank actually does get all of the data she's sending, but he's in the middle capturing it all, including her login, her password, so forth. Could also work with email, anything that's secure, Amazon, she could get credit cards. So, yeah, it doesn't matter where she is surfing from. The problem is it's not – to be the man in the middle would require kind of targeting her. It turns out, and I apologize, iOS 6.1.6 is not for the second generation iPad. It only works on the iPhone 3GS and the iPod 4, so there isn't really an update for her iPad 2.
Other than going to 7.
Yeah. I apologize. I didn't realize that they
apologize.
Were. Well, I don't understand. Apple should have. Why didn't you patch it on those other ones? And by the way, you would have to do it directly because, of course, even on a 3GS, you would go and it would say, well, you might want, or an iPod Touch, you might want to do that iOS 7. So this is disappointing. Apple's right. It's kind of not a super likely hack, but she could. It's something that could happen to you easily from a phishing scam in an email or, so it would be something that could happen. I think probably. Why does she really hate iOS 7?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything about it.
Everything about it.
It doesn't like how it operates.
What does she do with her iPad? She doesn't. Does she shop on it? Does she do banking?
Yes.
She does email? Yes.
Exactly. That's about it, but yes.
Well, but that's exactly what's
that's
risky.
Exactly what the problem would be.
I'm amazed that Apple, frankly, did not update these other devices. This is fairly serious, and I think it's foolish of Apple to tell people it's not.
Yeah, because I called them directly, and they said, yeah, don't worry about it.
Wow. So there are ways to kind of, avoid it without going to iOS 7. Of course, the best way is to go to iOS 7. She has to be super suspicious now, basically.
Okay.
So I'm looking at an article. In fact, I'll put this article. It's from Computer World by Johnny Evans of how to stay safe online with iOS 6. Trust nothing is number one. You'll be the last to know if there is a problem. Don't click on links in emails, instant messengers, things like that. If she's going to go to her bank, go directly in Safari, type bastinbank.com, and go directly there. Don't click links to get there. Change her passwords. Don't use this. I bet, most people do. She uses the same password for a lot of sites. Stop that.
Okay, now, as far as anything purchased, she only uses PayPal. Will that help her?
No, because they could intercept and catch your PayPal. But here's something that would help her. Turn on two-factor authentication with PayPal. PayPal had, and she's not going to want to do this. She might hate this worse than iOS 7, but frankly, it's a good thing to do in general with your bank. Do it with Google, Twitter, Facebook. All use two-factor authentication. You need to know a password and a code that will be texted to you on your phone or emailed to you. Now, this isn't going to be perfect. If the guy's got your email password through the same attack, he might see this, but PayPal, you can put a second-factor authentication that will send you a six-digit code via a text message. So she goes to PayPal. She logs in to her PayPal account with their password, and then it says, okay, which phone do you want us to send the code to? You can also get a PayPal will sell you a dongle, a $5 dongle that you can use, too. That's even more secure.
Okay,
I have the little dongle. So you put it on your keychain, you press a button, and that six-digit code shows up there. Both of those will pretty much stymie this man in the middle attack.
Okay.
So that's not so bad. If it's always PayPal, like that's what she always uses.
Yes, that's it.
Get the PayPal football, or just look in security in PayPal. Get the football or have it register a mobile number, and then make sure that you can't log in without that text. That's going to stop them, I think. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today, I should mention, brought to you by, speaking of intriguing, a really intriguing new company called Prosper, PROSPER.com. If you go to prosper.com/twit, you can learn more about it. The idea of Prosper is it's peer-to-peer lending. It connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Prosper.com/twit. One of the nice things at Prosper that you can do is go in there and quickly check your rate. See how much you can borrow and for how much, what the interest rate will be. And by the way, that does not ding your credit report. They do not report to the agencies, the credit reporting agencies. If you knew you had, say, $35,000 in the next 72 hours to cover your needs, what would you do? tell you one thing I'd do is pay off any extra high-rate credit cards, get them down to that low interest rate, start a business maybe, do some home improvement. Prosper offers low, fixed rates, unsecured personal loans. You don't need any collateral. Multi-year terms are available. It's Silicon Valley's answer to personal loans. This is a hot category right now. With Prosper's innovative peer-to-peer lending process, no outrageous fees, no raising interest rates, and you don't have to go into the bank. There is no bank. Prosper has more than 2 million members, over 900 million in funded loans. Prosper.com/twit. Go to the website right now, and you could check your rate, find out what you would get, and it will not affect your credit score, which is nice. For a limited time, Prosper is offering Twit viewers a $50 Amazon gift card when you fund a loan. Go to prosper.com/twit. That's a special site just for you. You'll see the Twit logo. Prosper.com/twit. Up to $35,000 in just 3 days. And you'll get a $50 Amazon gift card when you get a loan. Prosper.com is not affiliated with Amazon. For gift card details, visit the website prosper.com/twit. And we thank Prosper for their support of the Tech Guy Show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This guy's built to perform. Mr. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. He is the host of a podcast on the Twit Network called Home Theater Geeks every Monday, 1 p.m. 1 p.m. or 2 p.m.?
Actually, it's on Thursdays now.
Oh, that's right. We moved it.
We've changed the schedule. Thursdays at 2:30 p.m. Pacific, 5:30 Eastern.
Yeah. And so you can watch twit.tv or just go to twit.tv/HTG. And everybody was raving about last week's show.
Yeah, that was it was great. It was a guy named Keith Yates, who's a world-renowned acoustician and theater designer. And he had plenty of really interesting things to say about bass. He's way into bass and how
bass.
No, not that. Well, yeah, I mean that would come through the subwoofer, some of it anyway. No, but getting the low frequencies in a theater to be consistent from seat to seat. It's true. It's absolutely true. If you don't take care with where you place your subwoofer and how you've set it up, and in fact, if you have one subwoofer, it makes it worse than if you have multiple subs. You could have just booming bass in one seat, and the next seat over, a few inches away, you could hear nothing.
You're talking movie theaters primarily.
I'm talking
home theater too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, and it all has to do with how the bass frequencies, the low frequencies, reverberate, reflect, and bounce around in the room. And so if you have very stiff walls, like made out of concrete, you're going to have more of a problem than if you have drywall or, you know, particle board. Well, not particle board, but drywall, basically, gypsum board, that kind of flexes and almost... it's called a diaphragmatic absorber. Ooh, you know, very scary, but it's really not. It's actually your friend because it helps absorb some of those bass frequencies, particularly the ones that tend to build up in your room into what are called standing waves or room modes, and cause this problem of one seat is blown out by the bass and the next seat is, I don't hear any low frequencies. So it was a great show. I agree. He's quite a remarkable fellow.
How do you solve this? By moving?
Well, we talked about things like he's in the higher end of things, and so people often build rooms to his specifications. And I asked him, well, what are the dimensions of the room that you need? Because I always hear a lot of people say, oh, the ratio of the length to the width to the height needs to be this ratio or that ratio. Well, there is some acoustical theory behind that makes some sense, but he points out those ratios only apply to a strictly shoebox-shaped room. And the theaters that he deals with anyway have risers for the second row of seats, maybe have a stage in the front. And so there aren't simple ratio measurements in these rooms. They're much more complicated. And so he advocates using a very technical, very geeky process for evaluating the low frequency performance in a room and which frequencies are building up in certain areas and null in other areas, called computational fluid dynamics. Now, you took some physics, as I recall.
I know a little bit about fluid dynamics.
Yes, and I do too. Enough to be dangerous anyway. But, you know, if you have a PhD in fluid dynamics, then you can, in fact, calculate out all these things and make the base much more smooth and even across the room. And I said, well, yeah, but a lot of people, most people probably don't have the resources to pay somebody with a PhD in fluid dynamics to make that calculation. So what do you recommend for the rest of us? And he said, well, really multiple subwoofers helps an awful lot. And you can either put them in the four corners of the room or at the midway points, which is research that was done by Harman International, you know, the company that makes JBL, Harman Kardon, Infinity speakers. They make a bunch of brands. They're here in Southern California. And they did some research many years ago that indicated if you have four subwoofers, and they don't even have to be, you know, super duper high-end subwoofers. They can be, you know, moderate subwoofers. They don't have to be super expensive. You put them in the four corners or at the four midway points of your walls, and that's going to really smooth out the bass, what we call seat-to-seat variation. It's going to minimize the seat-to-seat variation, which is what you want, because you don't want your guests in your home theater to, you know, come in and say, hey, I don't hear any bass, or, oh, man, I need my earplugs. So,
let me, you know, as long as we're talking about home theater sound, I'm going to pass along a question from my good friend Pete.
Sure.
Who asked me the other day. Now, Pete's, you know, getting on, as we all are. He's over 40.
As we all are. Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, is there something wrong with the way they're mixing TV these days? because I can't, it all's muddled. I can't hear the words. And he bought, now, his wife, Frederique, on your recommendation, bought the sound bar. I'm sure the good
Pioneer sound bar.
Yeah, the good sound bar.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, you know, the only thing I can think of is maybe if you had a true 5.1 surround system, you could boost the center channel, because that's where all the dialogue that he can't understand is coming
from. That's correct. And so you would boost the dialogue.
I noticed that when I have a center channel speaker and it's properly placed, I can understand the dialogue much better.
Yes.
On a surround sound recording.
Yep. And that's true. That's absolutely true. Yeah. Plus, in the receiver, you can boost the center channel, which is, as you say, where all the dialogue is.
Can you do that if you're in a stereo system or a sound bar?
Well, a stereo system's a little harder because you only have two speakers, right and left, and you're using what's called a phantom center, which is if the same sound is in both left and right channels equally, it will appear to be coming from the middle between the two speakers. Now, in a sound bar, that's a little more tricky. Now, the Pioneer sound bar, I believe, has three different modes, preset equalization curves, if you will. And one of them, I believe, is called movies. And there might even be one called dialogue. I have to go back and look now. But if there is one called movies or dialogue, use that one, because it's going to emphasize the center channel, the dialogue channel, because a lot of people have this problem. Peter's not alone.
It's partly age, though, isn't it?
Yes.
Because you lose low frequencies with age.
High
frequency. He happens to be, he does super high quality hardwood flooring, so he spends a lot of time with sanding machines. And I have a feeling, like me, who I wear headphones all the time, that some of us have more high-end hearing damage than others.
Well, that's true. Now, noise-induced hearing loss, which is what happens when you attend a lot of rock concerts, or as was the case with me, I played in a lot of rock bands in college. Mm-hmm. If you don't protect your hearing, which kids never do, they think they're immortal, right? You'll end up with a notch, a decrease in sensitivity in your hearing at around 2 to 4 kilohertz, which is, ironically, the exact area where most speech intelligibility lies. So if you have a deficit in that frequency range, you're not going to be able to...
It's like they planned it that way.
I know. What happened with that? How can the universe be that cruel?
Yeah, you'd think evolutionarily we'd like it. Maybe not. Maybe we need to hear a tiger put footprints or something more.
Well, yeah, I suppose. But in any event, the unfortunate thing is noise-induced hearing loss will lead to a deficit in the speech range. So that's why you need to boost up the center channel in many cases, such as Peter's, in order to be able to hear it. Otherwise, though, age-related hearing loss is really more of just a high-frequency roll-off, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a problem. And with that soundbar, I think the Pioneer soundbar does give you a nice solution to
it. You still like that one? That was designed by
Andrew Jones.
Andrew Jones, rather, yeah.
Who also designs $80,000 a pair speakers. Right. So he really knows what he's doing.
But did is it like Betty Crocker? He just put his name on it and said, do whatever
No. Not in this case.
All right.
He seriously designed it and did a fabulous job.
You like that show? twit.tv/HTG. He also is on the AVS forum. That's where his editor-in-chief, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru.
Thanks.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. We got Ron next from Downey, California. Hi, Ron. Leo here.
Hey, it's great to talk to you, Leo.
Good to talk to you, too. Thanks for calling.
Hey, I don't know if I've got a problem or if I'm potentially going to get a problem, but I have a Nexus 7, mm-hmm. and I've been going to the L.A. County Library websites to check out e-books.
Yeah.
And I notice now that I'm getting a message. I'm either getting redirected or I'm getting a little pop-up that says, I need to install Media Player 12.2.
Ugh.
And then when I go to the...
I hate this. I could tell you now. You can stop right there. I know what's going on. A lot of libraries do this. Libraries, whether it's their own idea or the publisher's ideas, want to treat digital media just like they treat physical books. It's probably publishers. But the idea is, you know, the truth is digital stuff, you could have an infinite number of copies on loan. They don't want that. So what they do is they have a limited number of copies, and it's copy protected, and part of the copy protection times out after 2 weeks, so you have to bring the book back or pay an overdue fine. This is crazy. This is like being so stuck in the physical world that they can't imagine a digital world being any different. So what you're running into, and a lot of libraries do this, maybe all libraries at this point, they're using a form of content protection, comes from Microsoft, doesn't work on Macs, doesn't work on Nexus 7s, which is our Android, only works on Windows machines. It's part of the copy protection that times you out after 2 weeks or 30 days, whatever their timeout is, that keeps you from making copies of it. It means you can't use these on a Nexus 7.
No, that doesn't seem to be the problem, though. I can check out the books at the library.
Really?
That's not the issue. I'm getting this message that says, I need Media Player 12.2. When I go to the Tech Guy Labs site, I get a pop-up at the top that says, I need Media Player 12.2, or I need Flash.
You need Flash is what the Tech Guy Labs site says. That's Flash. Different from Media Player. Media Player is Windows Media Player. Can you play those books back, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, I can read the books. That's not...
Ah, interesting.
But
I don't know if that's an end around or what. They want you to use Windows Media Player, which provides the copy protection, but it sounds like you're getting around it. Our site, unfortunately, you can use our site in every way. The only thing you won't get is the video playback because that uses Flash, and that's not us, that's YouTube. You can get around that by signing up for the YouTube HTML5 experiment, which should work fine on your Nexus 7.
Even on my PC, though, I'm
yeah, because
all these Flash yeah. Player HD or Media Player 12.2 or
well, this is a problem. Some of this content requires a certain kind of player. It won't play back in your browser. And there's two different players, obviously, that you don't have that it's looking for. One is Flash and one is Windows Media Player.
So the legit thing that I can go to
Microsoft and down
because I'm
well, not on your Android. You can't. There's no Windows Media Player for Android or Flash.
No, I'm on my PC. I go to the library on my PC. I check out the books, and then then they get downloaded to the Nexus 7. Everything I'm doing through my PC.
That's how that's happening. So in the download process, the Windows Media Player is checking that book out for you on the PC, and then you could put it on a portable device. Now, the one thing that you should watch out for, if you do see that Flash Player HD, there's no such thing.
Okay.
So that worries me. That sounds like it is... I mean, the Flash Player by default is HD. I'm just going to look and see. I think that sounds phony. I think that's it's a malware installer that some advertisements contain, pretending that you need it to play back their content. Ignore that.
Okay.
And if you decide you want Windows Media Player, get it from Microsoft, right? If you decide you want Flash, get it from Adobe. That's who makes Flash. do not download these things from a link that comes up.
Right. No, I understand. I listen.
And actually, the Media Player 12.2 is also malware. So you're not seeing this on your Nexus 7, or are you?
No, I'm not seeing it on my Nexus 7.
Just I misunderstood. I thought it was popping up on your Nexus 7. You're seeing this on your PC.
Yes.
Yeah, your PC has malware on it.
But I've done a thorough scan, and there's nothing.
Well, I'm sorry. It doesn't have necessarily have malware on it. If you installed that stuff, it would.
Right.
Those pop-ups are an attempt to...
get me to put malware on my...
Get you to... Yeah, you got it.
Right. So is there a way to prevent getting these?
Well, don't go to those sites anymore. Those sites have been compromised.
What about your site?
My site's popping up Media Player 12.12?
It is when I... Yeah, it is on my computer.
Anybody else in the chat room ever seeing that? Because that, I don't, it could be coming. Sometimes sites get compromised. I'll check and make sure ours is not. I don't believe it is. We have pretty good sysadmins who work all the time to keep it safe. It sounds like at this point you have the malware or a toolbar or something that's popping that up. You know, the real problem with this, you're seeing a pop up from a website. Let me see. It says your computer may be affected with adware. The real problem with this is Microsoft and others won't identify adware as malware because they don't want to get sued, probably. In my opinion, it's malware. Anything that sneaks on your system and does this kind of thing is malware. But it comes on it kind of semi-legitimately. If you download stuff, say, from download.com is notorious for this. CNET runs this site, and they got to stop doing this. But there are other downloader sites. They wrap the download in a special downloader, and in the download process, you should see a pop-up that says, "Hey, for your convenience, we'd like to install product X." And then that product is on your system, and it's adware, not malware, but it's such malicious and annoying adware that I consider it malware. But for legal reasons, I think anti-malware companies don't want to brand it that. The thing that makes it not be malware is it asked you and you said yes, and it has an uninstaller in the programs and features section or the add remove programs section of your control panel. So I would look there and look at what you've got and uninstall anything that, you know, like you'll know because it sounds like malware and it's not stuff you installed. So I would check in your add remove programs.
Okay.
It's annoyanceware, somebody said. Yeah, somewhere between adware and malware. Browser hijacker object would do that as well. But they're called BHOs. They change your search page. They change your home page. They may pop up ads on other people's sites. I think that's what you've got. And these aren't illegal or malicious or considered malicious, except that they are.
Okay. Can I ask one more?
So look in your add remove programs, or if you have Windows 8 or 7, the programs and features control panel, and just I think you'll be able to uninstall all of those.
Okay, can I ask one more separate?
Sure.
Offline maps. Can you explain how to get offline maps onto my Nexus 7?
Yeah. So Google me. I should fire up my Nexus 7 and walk you through the process, and I'll do that after the break. But Google keeps changing maps, and so I don't know what the process is. They've hidden it away. You're talking about the Google Maps app?
Yes, I'd like to go on a vacation. I'd like to get some maps offline.
Yeah, yeah. So this issue that you were talking about, just to circle back, is an issue with something on your system. I'm being told the LA library system, like many library systems, uses copy protection called Overdrive that does work on Android. So it's not coming from the library system.
Okay.
It used to be they would use a Windows Media extension. This is something new, and I will tell you how to get. Hang on and keep listening. I'll tell you how to get the maps downloaded, so you don't need internet access as you walk around with your Nexus 7 and use Google Maps. I guess we'll take a little break and we'll come back and show you how to download offline on Google Maps right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, hour two of the Tech Guy Show, in which we talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, whatever is on your mind. So we were, right before the break, our caller was asking us, Ron and Downey, how to offline store map information offline. So, for instance, he's got a Nexus 7, which is an Android tablet, and he wants to use Google Maps, but maybe you're walking around Paris and you can't save, you know, you can't get online as you're walking around, but you want to have these maps available to you. How could you save them? Well, there's a weird hack that I think is probably not intentional, but if you search for, in the map search, OK Maps, Was that it? I've forgotten now. Yeah, it'll preload the map, and it'll say the on-screen map area has been cached at the bottom of the screen. And at that point, that map area is in memory, which is weird. They used to have it a menu item in Google Maps. They took that out a few versions ago. And now, I'm not really sure exactly what it is. Is it that you have to do a search of some kind? Or anyway, OK Maps works. It's a very strange hack. It is intentional, but the question is why, and why they came up with such a strange way to do it. Sounds to me like they really didn't want most people to know how to do this. There is documentation on Google's support site. We'll put a link in the show notes, and it's the one that says one of two things: tap the search box, scroll down past the search selections, and you'll see an entry on the device. So tap the search box, scroll down. Whoops. Let me see if I can do this. Scroll down. See, that's too hard. Type OK Maps. I think that's easier. But apparently, if you can scroll down. Yeah, there it is at the very bottom. Make this map area available offline. Now, you can't do it for like all of North America. There's a limitation to how much you can do. And they aren't clear about that. The amount of map that you can make available offline, says Google, will depend on the amount of storage on your device. If you have limited storage, making a new area available offline could replace previously offline maps. And if you're offline for a long period, typically more than 14 days, or you clear application data for Google Maps, they'll also be deleted. Not all areas can be made available offline. I don't know what that means either. I'm not sure why they got so cagey about this. So there is still a way to do it. Now, there are third-party programs that you can install. By the way, that works on iOS and Google Maps. There are third-party programs you can install. Works on iOS version of Google Maps and the Android version of Google Maps. Nav Free USA, says J5JCH in our chat room. It is a GPS app. There are others on iOS. I've used, and I love Motion X GPS. So there's some good solutions out there. It's very odd. Now, our next question comes from the chat room. How do you get longitude and latitude from Google Maps? All right. Anybody knows that? You can go in our chat room or call 8888, ask Leo. I do want to address Ron's other question, because this is something that's coming up a lot more lately, which is that stuff is getting on your computer that isn't exactly viruses, but is annoying. And it's unfortunately really easy on Windows to have this happen. You download a program from download.com, which used to be a very reputable site and still run by CBS Interactive and CNET, and seems to me should be still reputable, but is not. And you'll get a bunch of stuff. Now, they ask you, there's check boxes, but you have to kind of jump through hoops not to get it. And once you get it, all sorts of junk is installed on your computer. Other sites do similar things. It's really a shame. One way to avoid this, stop running as an administrator. I know people don't want to do this, but it is very effective. Software cannot install on your computer unless you're an administrator. If you're running as a limited user on Windows or a standard user on a Macintosh, anytime you need to install something, the computer is going to have to ask you for administrator password. If you want to keep your kids from accidentally doing this, which is a good idea, don't give them an administrative password. Have them call you. Dad! Yes, it's a little inconvenient, but believe me, it's a lot less inconvenient than getting on the system and deleting all this adware. So I highly recommend for everybody, not just kids, not just parents of kids, but everybody, start running as a limited user. You'll be a lot safer. A lot safer. Now, as I was talking, wow, Dr. Mom came up with a Google Help answer that tells you how to get the longitude and latitude from Google Maps. Now, it depends on the version you have. In the new Google Maps, if you click a location on the map that isn't a marker or a pin, just click on a non-marker location, it will give you the longitude and latitude. On the older Google Maps, right-clicking a location will do it. So there you go. We'll put a link to this Google answer in our show notes, techguylabs.com. Once again, brilliant chat room work. Thank you, chat room. Very handy. And I don't know why Google is being so obscure about these commands. I guess they want to make maps, and they have really done a lot of that. Make maps as clean and simple as possible to use. So they're hiding some of those features. Brett in Woodbridge, New Jersey. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brett.
Yes, how you doing? I have a few questions. And by the way, this is Brett the Geekster. I just wanted to ask your opinion on what would be a good router for under 100 that would be good for HD streaming and more bandwidth.
You know, the router doesn't really have that much to do with it. There are a lot of different routers under $100. Frankly, I use the Apple routers, which are over $100. That's a little bit superstitious of me, but I feel like I get better results with those. But D-Link is a good router manufacturer. I would not buy Linksys at this point. Too many security issues. They were sold by Cisco to Belkin, and I'm worried that Belkin will devote even less security resources to their software, and so I have a feeling that's going to get even less secure. But I think D-Link is quite good, and they're under $100. I am going to review. I just ordered, and it should come any day now. D-Link has a new Wi-Fi router that's for travel. It's kind of interesting. It has a big battery in it, so you can charge your phone from it. It's got a USB port for your phone. It allows you to get to a hotel that has Wi-Fi only, capture that Wi-Fi signal, run it through the router for security, and then distribute it to multiple computers in the room. You know how you normally have to log in with each computer individually? It's an interesting, this new D-Link Wi-Fi router is very interesting. I don't think I would use it day-to-day. I think it's more for a travel router because it's very compact. But I like the idea. The D-Link, what is the number of it? They call it a pocket router. Or if you're in Australia, pocket router. The DAP1350, is that it? As soon as I get it, I'll give you a review of it. I've ordered it. Craig in Vista, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Craig. Oh, yeah, another good point. Turn off the admin in any router. Don't let Wi-Fi admin. Go ahead.
Hey, okay. I'm pretty much got the same thing. I tried to download an update for my Android phone on my PC and got a zip file and unzipped it and got a lot of malware or adware on it.
Yeah, it's not exactly malware. I think it's malware.
Yeah, I went into and deleted all the programs, but they still come up. I tried to do a system restore.
Well, hold on just a second. We're going to take a break, and maybe I can help you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today is brought to you by ZipRecruiter.com. If you have a business and you've got job openings, do you know where the best place to hire people is, the best place to find candidates? There's so many different job boards, aren't there? Who knows which one's going to give you the talent you need? So the best way to fill that position with the perfect candidate is to post all your job listings on all the job sites. That's what ZipRecruiter.com does. You post with one click of the mouse to 50-plus job sites and social networks like LinkedIn, like Facebook, Twitter, and Google. ZipRecruiter.com is a really great way to find the right talent. They'll add your company logo and colors to your job pages, so it's branded. It's your job page. You can add unlimited users to your account, create an instant job page on your website, include company careers page to use as a career link. Post once and just watch those qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. In fact, it's kind of cool because they'll automatically highlight the best candidates. ZipRecruiter.com, the best way to post jobs. You could try it free right now for 4 days at ZipRecruiter.com/techguy. You'll find out why more than 100,000 businesses, including Twit, my own business, uses ZipRecruiter.com to fill job postings. 50-plus job boards with one submission. ZipRecruiter.com/techguy for your free 4-day trial. You screen them, you rate them, you hire the right person. Fast. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Craig in Vista, California. He tried to download an update for his Android phone. He did it on his computer. This is where you get in trouble on computers. Where did you go to get that download, Craig?
It was Pantech Burst. I think I probably went to a blog site that had it linked to that.
Okay, so really, you know this. Be really, really careful about where you get your files. You know it now.
Yeah, I was dumb.
You won't do that again.
I'm always telling everybody not to do that on the computer. They use the computer, and then I went ahead and did it. So
it's all right. It's all right. The only question is, we don't know what you've got now. It could be. I would not start. And a lot of people, the response to this is to go Google Adware Removal Tools, download more stuff of suspect quality, and run that.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to happen on my Google. If I use Google Chrome, but I prefer to use Internet Explorer, and on my Internet Explorer it pops up. So I just wondered if I
It infected Internet Explorer. It didn't infect Chrome. That's pretty common. It was able. It put a browser hijacker object into Internet Explorer. Turn off all your extensions on Internet Explorer. You might want to seek the extensions folder and go through it and delete stuff from there. It is. In most cases, if it's not malware, there will be an entry in the ad remove programs.
Yeah, I deleted a bunch of programs and
Good.
Put it in there. It was a bunch of game programs.
You could see all the stuff it put in there.
Yeah, and I deleted all those. I've deleted everything that's been installed within the last 2 weeks. And then I also went to System Restore to try to restore it. The day before that, but it wouldn't do the restore for some reason.
Yeah, okay, this sounds more and more like malware. So the way these guys get around being called malware is they ask, do you want to install this? They may do it cryptically without real warning, or they may even have a checkbox that says, we're going to install a lot of great stuff. You want that, right? And only check this if you don't want it. They make it as confusing as possible. So that's easy to miss. But the other way that they keep from getting labeled malware is by having an entry in ad remove programs. It's called programs. But if you can't uninstall it, and if it did this, it resets system restore points to keep you from going back, that's malware. Yeah. Now it's malware. It's officially malware. And that means you've got a whole nother problem here. Now, you can try Malwarebytes, malwarebytes.org. It's very good. Microsoft puts a malware, or malicious, I guess they call it, software removal tool on your computer. It's on there now, MRT. The way to run that is to go to a command line and type MRT. That'll open up the window. Do a thorough scan. Microsoft updates that every second Tuesday of the month, so that's usually pretty up to date. It's not an antivirus, but it does help with removal of malware. Malwarebytes works well, too. But remember, everything that I say about this every time is, you know, the most important thing is that you can't be sure you got it all unless you reinstall Windows.
Well, I'm running Windows 8, and I could do an update to 8.1. Would that?
Yeah, that would do that for sure. And you have the nice thing about Windows 8 is there is a restore operating system command built into it.
Right.
So you can, in fact, restore Windows. I would do that before you go to 8.1. That might not be a bad idea.
That's what I tried, and it wouldn't do it.
Wouldn't do it. Yeah, because these guys are trying to block it.
Yeah.
Back up your data. Try the Windows 8.1 update. It may block that as well. This is how we know it's malware. Once it starts doing stuff like that, it crosses the line. I mean, I think adware is malware because you sneaks onto your system. You technically you said yes, but it sneaks on your system, and it can be removed. That makes it adware. But if it isn't easily removed, then you got malware, and they're doing all sorts of things to prevent it. I bet you can't go to some of the major antivirus sites, things like that. Now we know we got malware, and truthfully, I almost always say reinstall Windows, wipe the hard drive, and reinstall, just because you can't be sure what you've got on there. And I understand that's a big pain. And so I'll tell you the alternate routes, which is malware bytes and the malicious software removal tool and other ones like that. Go to bleepingcomputer.com. This is a reliable site that has lots of information about malware removal. They have a Windows Defense unit. They have removal guides for all the different malware. This is reliable. Bleepingcomputer.com. And they'll have recommendations for tools. But you got to be careful. You got to be careful because a lot of these, you know, if you're a bad guy, what are you going to do? You're going to immediately post something on the web that says, this is a malware removal tool. Install this, run it, and you're in good shape. Here's an interesting site from one of our chatters, Marsworm. Unchecky. Unchecky.com. This is a direct response to these downloaders that install adware. Tired of unchecking unrelated offers while installing software? You need Unchecky. Now I haven't tried this, so I'm gonna trust our chat room that this is okay. Unchecky, but I love it that this exists. This is a direct response to this. Unchecky automatically unchecks unrelated offers, both saving you mouse clicks and making it less likely to miss a checkbox. Installers try to sneak additional programs as a natural part of the installation. Unchecky warns you when you try to accept a potentially unwanted offer, and it automatically updates itself. It's kind of a new kind of antivirus, isn't it? I'll have to do some research and see reliable this is, but that's a really good idea, and it just shows you how common this is. I have a feeling this is legit. It looks pretty legit. Very interesting idea. I wonder who this is from. The guys who do this stuff will not like it, but they deserve it. And frankly, I'm just shocked that CNET would continue to be doing this at download.com. It seems wrong. Seems wrong. And I'm sorry that you got bit, Craig. One of the disadvantages of buying inexpensive Android devices that are not a part of the Google ecosystem, and there are a lot of these, those are the really cheap ones, is updates don't work. It's hard to get software for them. If it doesn't have the Google Play Store on it, Google Maps, Gmail, all of the Google apps on there, I would stay away from it. But those are the cheapest ones. They're based on the open source free Android operating system, but they don't include the Google services, because to put Google services on there, you have to go through an approval process from Google, et cetera, et cetera. That costs more. And so the really cheap Android tablets don't do it, but I don't recommend them for end users. It's dangerous. 8888 Ask Leo. I appreciate the call. Thank you, and I'm sorry that happened to you. If you have a question about technology, a comment, a suggestion, I'd love to hear from you. We will put, I've mentioned a lot of links now. We'll put those in our show notes. James DeRuvo's writing it all down, right, James? Yep. Writing it all down and putting it up on the website at techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. We also have a link there to our chat room. Lots of great people in there who can help you too, by the way. There's a help section as well, but they're kind of the kids in the back of the class. They give me a lot of help. It also has links to previous shows, audio and video from those shows, place where you can make comments. It's all there. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Jocelyn is in Pasadena, California, our next caller. Hi, Jocelyn. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm in the market for a new laptop.
Okay.
And I don't really have any loyalty to one brand over another.
Oh, that's what's wrong with the computer world today. No loyalty. No, actually, that's a good thing. What do you need? What do you use today, for instance?
I just have a desktop, HP desktop.
Okay.
It's kind of on its last leg.
Using Windows?
Yes.
XP?
Yes.
Yes, it is time to get a new one.
Yeah. My son has a MacBook Pro, and he really likes that.
Would your son be willing to kind of help you with support and so forth?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, that's important. You know, the truth is the difference between Microsoft and Apple, between Windows and Mac, is more a difference of preference than of actual functionality. They both work pretty well. If you're a gamer, you probably want to use Windows. If you're in business and you know there's apps for your business, they're usually on Windows. But for most people, especially at home use, I think they're very similar. And I actually, in some ways, prefer Macintoshes for home use. But really, the final determinant is who's going to help you, who's going to support you. And if you've got people in the family who are sitting there with a Mac, I'd get a Mac.
Okay.
Is portability important to you?
I don't want to be tied to the desk. So, you know, if I want to be sitting on my bed.
Yeah.
So
that's why you want a laptop.
Yeah.
But you're not going to take it out of the house much?
Probably not.
So super light. See, there are two different Apple laptops. There's the Mac Pro, MacBook Pro, and then there's the MacBook Air. Mm-hmm. And the Air is primarily a great thing because it's so light. And it also has super battery life. The MacBook Air has 13 hours of battery life in the 13-inch model. So that's really, really long. But if you don't take it out of the house, who cares?
Right.
You want to sit in front of the TV and have it, or sit at the breakfast table and have it, then it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
And the nice thing about the MacBook Pros, they're a little faster. Battery life is less, not more. But 5 or 6 hours, that's plenty. They have better screens if you get a Retina. And I think those great screens are great. And they're bigger screens. They start at 15 inches. They start at 13, but they have a 15-inch. I didn't ask one important thing, though. Do you have a budget?
Well, if I'm willing to, you know, spend the money on, you know, the MacBook Pro, I would spend that on a PC if I'm getting the quality. But
yeah, I mean, that's the truth is, that's, boy, you said the right thing. You can get a $300 PC. The problem is junk.
Right.
So if you want the quality build, then you're going to spend roughly the same for a Mac or a PC, because quality builds cost around $1,000 or more.
Okay.
That's just going to be the case. Now, there's one other kind of computer you might want to think about that isn't expensive. It's a Chromebook. This is the Google OS, and all it is a browser. And you can do anything you can do with Google Chrome. There's browser extensions for a lot of things, but really it's for email and surfing. And if that's what you do, a Chromebook's not a bad choice either.
Okay.
So now Samsung's just released a new one that has very good battery life. It's pretty fast because it has a lot of memory. It's okay. Here's why a Chromebook is, for some people, a good idea. First of all, it's very simple. If you can use a browser, you can use it. There's no complicated operating system to worry about. And it's much more secure. In fact, it has a power wash feature that if something goes wrong, you just power wash it and you're back where you were. But to use it, you have to be online. Sounds like you are, because you're at home all the time. Mm-hmm. You're using it at home. And you have to have a Google account, obviously. If you're in the Google universe with Google Calendar contacts, Google Voice, Google Mail, all of that stuff, it's a natural. And they're very inexpensive, but still, I think, decent quality. So a Chromebook for the very simple uses. I think a MacBook is a great choice, but it might be more than you need. Are there any programs that you like to run? Or?
Just like the word processing.
Okay. Do you use Microsoft Office?
No.
Do you need Microsoft?
Yes.
Okay.
But like, my son has the Macintosh.
Oh, okay. So he can install it five times. Yeah. So he could put it on yours.
Right.
So the MacBook Pro with Retina display starts at $1,300. It's not cheap.
Right.
And that's a 13-incher. But the base model, 13 inches, is very nice. I would go to an Apple store and look at it. This is a beautiful computer. Pricey, admittedly. They have a less expensive MacBook Pro, but it's a lower quality screen. I think get the Retina display if you're getting a MacBook Pro. If you want a Windows machine, I'm very fond of the Asus line. I have an Asus S7. It's very thin, very light, very beautiful. Touch screen, which I think is important. You're going to get Windows 8.
Right.
Which means you want touch. And I think those are very nice as well.
And how's the battery life on those?
The new ones are really good. I think it's 8 hours, something like that. But again, you're not leaving the house. I mean, I think most of the time you'll be able to plug it in. And if you're somewhere you can't, you're probably not going to be there for more than 5 or 6 hours, I would think.
Right.
But I don't know.
Okay.
Dell also makes very good laptops. But I think the good ones are going to all be around $1,200.
Right.
Right. So if you have the money, I'd get a MacBook. This is what somebody in the chat room just said this, and I agree. If you don't get a Chromebook, there's your choice.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
I think because your kid is an Apple user, it's a good way to go.
Okay.
Because he'll support you. You call him up. You say, I can't figure out how to do this. Does he know Windows too?
Yes, he knows both.
Okay.
But it definitely has an affinity for the...
Yeah, well, listen to your IT guy.
Yeah.
He'll tell you what to get. He'll tell you what to get. There's some variant. The new Dell XPS 13 is very nice. It's very thin, very light, beautifully made. But again, you're going to spend, to get a decent Windows notebook, you nailed it. You're going to spend about the same as you would for a Mac. And I think Macs are a little more secure, to be honest. Bad guys aren't aiming at Macs quite the way they aim at Windows PCs. Ken Long Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, thanks. Listen, I've got a question regarding a store that carries all sorts of brands and makes and models of desktop printers because I'm looking for one.
Mm-hmm.
I was a service engineer for Xerox for 31 years, so I understand the spec sheets. And after I picked out the particular printers I was interested in getting, I then went back to that store and was starting to look into the ink and so on. And one of my concerns came as a result of some information that was given to me by one of the people there. I've been in there so much in the past week that they've come to know me. That's why I don't want to get into the store.
You're one of those that haunts the store. Oh, you're back. Oh, nice to see you, Ken. You gonna buy someday, Ken?
No, they're very good.
Good, they ought to be. You know, if you want to survive as a brick and mortar store, you know, somebody can always buy on Amazon for less. You survive by being a service, given great service.
That's right. That's right. I was a Xerox engineer for 31 years in the field,
that's
so
great.
I know all about that.
Yep.
Okay.
It's all about service.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
When I went back to start looking for ink, okay, the problem is, well, I became pretty well known at the store. That's right. And one of the gentlemen there told me something about their printers, because I was asking about various things about the ink. I want to be able to refill my tanks. He told me that all of the printers that they sell in that store, every one of them, have a chip in them now that the manufacturers have installed to recognize if a tank has been refilled.
Oh, and I... Hold on a second. We're going to take a break. This is not conspiracy theory. This is true, and we'll talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I do, and her name is Kim Schaefer, our call screener. She's going to do a little black magic and put you on the air, like she did with Ken in Long Beach. Ken, it's absolutely true, and the reason... that many printer manufacturers put chips in is so that you won't use third-party cartridges, right? So, and I think this is wrong, but they do it anyway. And the reason is the printers are like $50 in many cases, the inkjet printers, and the ink is how they make all their money. It's the old give away the razor, sell the blade strategy. And so many people were using third-party cartridges that they started putting a chip in the cartridges, a chip which is patented and cannot be duplicated, that communicates with the printer. The printer says, yes, this is an original equipment, genuine manufacturer part, and will continue to print. There's another side effect of this, though. These ink cartridges also know when they're out of ink. And in some cases, but not all, once out of ink, you could put more ink in, and they're still out of ink. They say, we're done. Now, the manufacturers will say, well, we do this for a couple of reasons. First of all, third-party cartridges, we don't know. Remanufactured cartridges, we can't stand by them. They might spray ink all over your printer, all over your paper, and then you get mad at us. It is also the case in many cases, many printers, that the head is replaced along with the ink, and you need a new cartridge because you're going to get a new print head as well as more ink. And so injecting ink into that doesn't refresh the head and so is going to give you bad results. So that's their rationale. Of course, people want to use third-party cartridges and add ink because it's so expensive. But you can absolutely reset these cartridges. There are ways around it to do it if you're really cheap. I don't personally recommend refilling ink cartridges. There's a company that does this that tried very hard to advertise on the show, and I said no because I don't believe in it. It's messy. It's difficult. And I think it's a bad idea. And it's interesting that they have really tried to prevent people from doing this. So not all do. I'm told that, for instance, some printers like Epson printers, you can add ink to. I wouldn't recommend it, but you could. It is not. I don't think it's illegal for them to do this, but I do believe they do it, and it's annoying. It's basically a copy protection scheme. Make sense? Hello, Ken? I just answered his question, but he's disappeared. Listen on the radio. In about 40 seconds, Ken will say, oh, yeah, I'm here. Rusty in Chatsworth, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rusty.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
Somebody told me that inkjet ink is like $100 a pint, if you figure it. It's more expensive than blood. I'm well. How are you?
Doing okay. Got a question and actually got a follow-up on the download wrapper thing that some people should be aware of.
Thank you.
Neat social engineering.
Okay, thank you. I would love to
First
hear it.
Thing, had an iPad 1, finally upgraded because I was tired of it crashing out apps.
Yeah, the one's pretty old.
Yeah, so I got a 7. And then I discovered my favorite EPUB format reader is no longer available, Stanza.
Stanza doesn't work on iOS 7?
It doesn't exist anymore. It's been taken from the store.
Oh, that's interesting.
They got bought by Amazon.
Oh, and of course Amazon has their own proprietary copy-protected format. They don't want you to use Stanza.
Yep, and they eventually shut it down.
That's too bad, because Stanza was a great ebook reader.
Exactly. And I'll be honest, I buy a lot on Kindle. I take it, I strip it, and I put it over in Stanza because I never trusted them after the...
Right.
Did the, oops, we made a mistake and deleted a book without telling
you. Yeah, you remember that? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, that's what made me go to, okay, Stanza, done.
Right.
I paid for it. I don't want it disappearing. So I was wondering if you had any recommendations.
So you have it on your iPad now.
On my iPad 1. I don't have
Yeah,
it
but
on
you phone. Won't be able to get it on the new one. That's exactly right, yeah. There is on Wikipedia a comparison of all the different iOS e-reader software. It's a big, long table. They mention a couple of dozen programs. I use the Kindle reader, but of course the Kindle reader is playing into the hands of Amazon, which you probably don't want to do.
Well, I have that as well because I purchased a bunch of books through there, but other...
You can import, and you can import other non-protected formats into both the iBooks and the Kindle format. I'm looking at the still around readers. None of them look like... I don't think I've tried any of them. I don't know if they're all that well known, frankly. Stanza was the one everybody used.
Yeah, it was a fantastic app.
Yeah. I'll put a link in here. I mean, this at least gives you all the features. And it does talk about Stanza, so you can see what the features were of Stanza and compare it to other readers. What particularly the one that you probably care most about is the file formats that are supported.
Yeah, Stanza was wonderful with that.
Yeah. And this is a problem because...
I also have Caliber.
Caliber's quite good, yeah. But that's a desktop program, right? Is Caliber available for iPad?
No. What you do is you take your...
You convert with Caliber.
On your
right.
PC, yeah. Tell it what format you want.
Right.
There are certain plugins to deal with certain companies who want to lock your books, and I'll put it at that. And you can put them elsewhere.
Yeah, and then there's no copy. I would look at KY Book. KY Book Reader.
Okay.
It's by a Russian guy, so you know it's good. No, I'm just kidding. I would... it supports... Every one of the common formats like all the EPUB, you know, that kind of thing that are not copy protected.
The kind of open source formats.
Yes, the open source. That's the way to put it. That's what I was looking for, the open source formats. It supports EPUB, FictionBook, Text, RTF, PDF, DJVU, Deja Vu, CHM, Comic Book Reader, audiobook formats. It's pretty cool.
Okay, and
it's free. KY Book. But it's sad about Stanza. And you know, you can figure why Amazon bought it, not because they loved Stanza so much, because they want to put it out of business. We're in a world that is rapidly moving towards this, in this direction of proprietary clothes. This inkjet printer cartridge thing is an exact example of, companies just want to control it.
Well, I mean, the thing that kills me, because, I make video games. I've been doing it for 25 years. And we had this big push to get away from proprietary and into standard.
Yeah.
And then, in the last few years, all of a sudden, it's getting proprietary.
Yeah.
AMD produced their own proprietary format to make their cards run better.
Yeah. I think that this is the natural trend of things. There is a book by a brilliant guy, Timothy Wu, called The Master Switch, in which he says all new technologies, whether it's the telegraph or the internet, start off very open and free because that's the best way for these to grow and innovate. Everybody contributes. But eventually the big money guys come in. He talks about the book starts with talking about long distance service, which was open and free until AT&T came along. They shut it down. They commercialize it. They maximize profit at the cost of openness. And then it swings back and forth, and there's the next open thing. And I think the internet, unfortunately, and technology in general, is swinging in that format, in that way, toward proprietary, and we should stop it. Because these things aren't good for us. They're good for the companies. Now, you may say, well, companies got to make money. Yeah, companies got to make money. That's fine. But let's support open standards, too, so that we can all innovate. Marvin is another one the chat room says is quite good. Marvin, MARVIN. You know, it's an interesting world we live in. So much stuff is free on the internet. So many apps are free. There's so many companies like WhatsApp that basically give away their service, and they're worth something. $16 billion in the case of WhatsApp. But what happens then is that a company like Facebook comes in and kind of shuts it down, makes it proprietary. But where does all the exciting stuff happen? Where does all the invention, the innovation happen? It happens in the free and open space. And that's really what we have to preserve and protect. It's what made the internet what it is. It's what made technology what it is. So when companies come along and say, nope, it's ours, we're going to lock it up, we got to fight that. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right. I'm going to Gazelle to sell all my other gadgets right now. Gazelle is the place to go to sell your used gadgets, the stuff you're done with, but somebody else might get something out of it. It's kind of like a really good way to recycle. You get paid for your old stuff. They even buy broken iPhones and iPads. They will buy your old phone, your tablets, your old computers. If you visit gazelle.com, they'll buy the old one from you. They make it so easy. Now, the nice thing about this, let's say you have an iPhone 5 and you want to get a 5S. Let me see. The nice thing about this, I actually have this phone. I'm wondering what it's worth. Good condition, yep. Oh, wow. $255 if it's unlocked. And they give you instructions on how to get it unlocked, by the way. $205 if it's locked. That is really great. And you have a month, you see? I have until April 7th to ship that to them. So it's a good idea to do this now. You've got 30 days to pull the plug. If a new phone or new tablet comes out, you can, cancel it. You can do whatever you want. I want you to go to gazelle.com and just rank up all the different stuff you've got and see how much it's worth. And they pay the postage when you pull the trigger. They'll send you a box with prepaid postage mailing. They turn around quickly, too, and their experts will look at the condition. If it's in better condition than you said, they'll actually up your offer. They'll also wipe your data if you forget to do so. I mean, I recommend you wipe your data, but if you don't worry. They'll take care of that for you. And then you get paid fast. They'll send you a check, sure, or if you want it right away, PayPal. But they can also send you Amazon gift cards. And if you buy on Amazon, this is a good deal because they'll add 5% to the overall value to the Amazon gift card. It is a great way to get cash for your old gadget. No wonder Gazelle has paid more than $100 million out to over 700,000 customers. Free shipping, fast processing. How much is your old stuff worth? Nothing if it sits in the drawer. could be quite a bit at gazelle.com. Sell your gadgets the fast and easy way, gazelle.com. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and smartphones and home theater and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. It is hour three of the Tech Guy show. So there's still plenty of time to talk. 8888-ASK-LEO. Ron on the line from Ventura, California. You're next. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, how you doing? You hear me, Leo?
I hear you great. Welcome.
Okay, super. I'm a loyal listener.
Thank you.
And I purchased a MacBook Pro approximately, about 7-8 months ago.
Good.
Transferred all my stuff because I've had, iPhone, iPad, so why not my computer? So anyway, long story short.
So this is your first computer?
My first computer. Not my first computer. My first.
Your first Macintosh.
Yeah. Yes.
All right.
So anyway, I've been working for him for about not quite a little bit less than a month. And all of a sudden, I was beginning to receive little error messages. And, it started to crash. And I see this little pinwheel. I said, what's going on here? I said, is it the RAM? Is it not enough memory? Did I do something wrong in transferring? And the guy
not
had
your
asked
fault.
Me to bring it in.
Yeah.
And they brought it in, and they did a lot of diagnostics on it. Then they said, okay, let's go ahead and reformat your hard drive. Well, I was against that. Yeah.
You always just rule of thumb before you ever bring a computer in, back it up. There's no,
Yeah, yeah. So I backed it up.
Good.
As they suggested, I did that.
Yeah.
But I said, look, I said, I have it partitioned off. I have boot camp, but I have Windows 8 on one side because I'm an architect and I go ahead and utilize AutoCAD and Windows, and I want my, Apple stuff for all my spreadsheets, pictures, etc.
Yeah.
So anyway, long story short, they went ahead and they reformatted the hard drive. They took the program off. And I said, oh, God, guys, come on, please. Anyway.
Well, you know why they do that? Because they really can't tell what's wrong unless they get you back to the state that it came from the factory, okay. Software-wise. And everybody will end up doing that. That's why I always say back it up first.
Okay, but to shorten up the explaining process, Leo, is I've gone through several months here of in and out of Apple.
They never figured out what was wrong.
We never figured out what's wrong.
Did they replace? So there's a few things you kind of nailed it. There's a few things you should look at when this happens. First one, the most common source is hard drive errors. Did they try replacing the hard drive?
Well, that's what they're trying to tell me now. If we have to go ahead and replace the hard drive.
That's the first thing I always do because hard drives are a moving part. Well, you might have an SSD. Do you have a solid state drive in yours?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So it's a little less prone to damage, but nevertheless, a couple of bad sectors on a hard drive can really cause unreliability. Now, I have a brand new Mac Pro, that beautiful black cylinder, and my Mac Pro was doing the weirdest things. It was restarting. It was flaking out. It was forgetting USB stuff. And I went and scratched my head like crazy. And fortunately, I brought it in here to some engineers and on staff. And they did some tests. And they said, well, there seems to be something wrong with the RAM. And they took out one of the RAM chips. And it worked. And in fact, if you look at the RAM chip closely, you can see it's actually a little bit scuffed up, and this was the upgraded chip. So by taking that out, everything worked fine. I got a replacement chip from Apple, and it's all fine. So it could be memory. This is the problem. It's flaky. It could be the sad thing is it could also be the motherboard, the logic board, and that's going to cost as much to fix as the Mac. But the good news is under warranty, so they've got to get it right. The bad news is you've been spending a lot of time going back and forth.
Exactly. And I can't afford to have anything go wrong right now. I'm working on a project, so I'm going to back up all my data. But then I'm going to go and reinstall AutoCAD. It was a pain for me to install AutoCAD and install Windows. It was a real pain.
Yeah.
So I've got to go through that. And that's a downtime. So I told the guys, I said, look, if I have to go through all these problems, please, come on. It's only whatever I spent on this thing. Close to, what was it?
They should swap it. The third time you bring it in, they should just say, here's a new one.
A new computer. Come on.
Yeah, I think there are lemon laws in California that basically say this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what did they say when you said that?
I said, enough of this back and forth.
Yeah, give me a new one, buddy.
A brand new one. She says, well, we have to go ahead and diagnose it before we can do this. We'll have to find out if we can do it, put a new hard drive in, a new motherboard, whatever, like you just suggested. And so I paid for a new computer.
Just give me a computer. I think you're absolutely right.
About a new computer.
Don't be a cheapskate, Apple. It's your. If this were a car, you know. Right. So what did they say? No, are they saying no?
She says, "Well, we have to go through this process before we can go ahead and say yes." She says, "Then we'll go. There's one last process."
So it's one last process, right?
That's correct.
One. Yeah.
So we'll wait after this. I said, "Well, how many times do we have to try before we finally, you know, come to the point?"
Don't have another one. If, at this point, if they say we got, you know, if it doesn't work, you write a letter to Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple Computer, One Infinite Loop, Cupertino, California, and you tell him the story you just told me, and you say, this isn't right, and you will get a new computer.
I'm going to write Tim Cook.
Yeah, tell him. This is not okay. You're wasting their time. They're wasting your time.
Exactly.
And when you bring it in, are they able to get it to fail?
No.
That's the problem. So this is the most difficult, and it's not Apple, it's anybody. The most difficult thing to solve is what we call an intermittent problem. It doesn't happen every time. If you could reproduce it, if you could go and say, watch, I press this key, and bam, then they'd go, okay. The problem is it's very hard to diagnose something that isn't reproducible. It doesn't happen all the time. And so, of course, the computer is acting nice when you get it to the store.
That's correct.
And then they say, well, we don't know... You know, if there's anything wrong with it, man, it looks okay to me. So be nice to them, by the way. The genius is, these are the guys you deal with in Apple Store, have a lot of leeway. And if they like you and you're nice to them, they can actually do what you want. But they have way too much leeway in some cases. So...
They know me there, and you know they've begun to know me, and they go, "Oh, Ron, please, you know, let's get this computer exchanged for you. What's going on?"
Good, they're on your side now.
They're on my side.
Believe you. Are they able to see any flaky behavior when they get it in there at all?
Yes, they see the pinwheel going.
Okay.
Startup. We've taken all the icons off the desktop, so it doesn't have a problem with starting
it
up.
It's the hard drive. It sounds like the hard drive. It really does.
Exactly. Right.
So they should just replace that. You tell me what happened. Write to Tim Cook. Every company, but especially Apple, they have an office of the president or office of the CEO, and that means there's 10 people, 20 people there who are sole job is to handle this kind of thing. When you write to the CEO, you get responses. The other thing that's very effective, it shouldn't be, but it is tweeting about it and making sure you @ Apple or whoever it is, Apple support, and that will get you some response. You know, I had a similar problem with this memory. I went through a lot of diagnostics with them. They said, well, send us a picture. We don't believe you. It's scuffed. Let me see. And then he said, yeah, it's scuffed. And they still said, but now you got to bring it to the store. They got to test it. Maybe they'll order a new part if they agree with you, and the new part will be in a month, and so you'll have to go home and then go back. It was a real pain. And then, but finally, I was able to escalate it to somebody, and they sent me a new part. So I think that it's just, you know, as with any company, a question of getting to the right people, making enough noise, being the squeaky wheel. There are lemon laws in California. They have a responsibility to give you a computer that works. And I'm sorry that this has taken so long.
That's crazy. It's very crazy.
Yeah.
Well, that number was one Cupertino. One
infinite loop. You could just search for on Google mailing address for Tim Cook. But it's Tim Cook, CEO, Apple Computer, One Infinite Loop. Cupertino, California. I don't know the zip code.
That's okay. I'll find
They'll take care of you. They will. One thing Apple does, one of the reasons you pay so much for Apples, is they do have good support. They will take care of you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. We're talking to Ray in Tennessee. Hi, Ray.
Leo, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Wonderful. It is a privilege to talk to you. Man, I've been a fan for years since the screensavers.
Thank you.
Tech TV.
Thank you.
Technology almanacs, everything.
Wow.
Yeah, it's nice to finally get to actually talk to you and tell you thank you. You've made my life a lot easier with the knowledge that I've gleaned over the years from you.
Thank you. My pleasure. And thank you for the kind words.
Well, thank you. Well, with that said, I have a friend of mine that just purchased a new MacBook Air.
Yeah.
He has a Canon network printer, a wireless printer.
Okay.
I'm not a Mac guy.
Yeah.
That's not
so
real.
It's pretty straightforward. You want to add that printer to the network?
Yeah, and he's added it, and he can, as long as he's hardwired, he prints, scans, everything fine.
Ah.
The minute he tries to go to wireless or networking, it says the printer is offline. And I told him to go to the Canon website.
I've used a Canon printer before on my wireless network for years. In fact, I used a Canon Pixma. I think they've got a newer line now. The printer, when you look at it, is it in fact online? Have you been able to print it with any other computer wirelessly?
Yes. He had a Windows.
And the Windows computer can print wirelessly to that printer.
Correct.
So because that's the first thing you got to do is get the printer on the Wi-Fi network, effectively and properly.
Right.
So good. And so for some reason, the Mac will not print to it wirelessly, but only when it's connected via an Ethernet cable.
Correct. So I told him to make sure he had the right drivers, and he did.
Is the Mac on the same network as the printer?
Yes.
There's only one Wi-Fi network? There's not a 5 gigahertz and a 2.4 gigahertz or anything like that? It's not dual band, is it?
It's all on the same.
All on the same network. And the Mac is on Wi-Fi, correct?
Correct.
When you go to the system preference pane for printers and scanners and you add the printer, you can see the printer, correct?
Correct.
And you're able to add it?
Correct.
But it won't print to it?
Won't print to it. I told him to make sure he had the checkbox checked that says share on
the
network.
No, it's not shared on the network. It's not the same thing.
No.
That's so other people can go through his Mac to the printer.
Oh, okay.
So that's not necessary. Here's what I would do. I would remove the printer in the system preference pane.
Okay.
Just delete it. You press the minus box and delete it. And add it again. If you can see it and it adds, it's on the Wi-Fi network. It is a Wi-Fi printer. It should print just fine.
Right.
I don't know what else you could do. When you do add the printer through the Macintosh, it will use the Macintosh's printer drivers. The only other thing that's worth trying is going to the Canon site and get their Macintosh drivers. Perhaps there's an issue with them.
He did that.
Yeah, generally, I would use the Apple drivers because, you know, they're kind of known to work.
Okay.
I've never had a problem with this. I've used wireless printers for the last few years on my Mac networks. And if the Mac can see it and add it, that means it can see it and add it. I don't know why it wouldn't. I would. This is one of those things, obviously, I can't diagnose very well via phone.
Yeah, right.
But I would say there's some oddball setting. Make sure, you know, look at all the check boxes. The fact that you can see it and add it means that it's what we call Bonjour compatible. That's what Apple's using to see it and add it. And that's all that's good. All that's good. I can't think of any reason. Make sure it's not wired when you add it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You want to add it as a wireless printer. Don't add it as a wired printer.
Correct. Well, we'll just delete it and reinstall.
Yeah, just to reassure you, there's no magic in this. It's a very easy thing to do. The old days, it was very hard to get a printer working with a computer. But Apple's got it down, and these Canon printers work just fine. They're designed to work with Apple's. I cannot think what would be wrong. Make sure you don't have any physically attached printers. It might be printing to the physically attached or trying to. Make sure is there only one printer in the printer dialog?
Yes, one printer.
That's it. I would try one more time. Yeah, and try to do it with the auto recognition rather than entering an IP address by hand or searching for it. It should, when you go to the system preference pane for printers and scanners and you say add a printer, just sit and wait until it sees that printer. And that if it sees it, that should be able to print to it. John in did I lose John? I guess I did. How about Betsy in Claremont, California? Hi, Betsy. Leo Laporte.
Hi.
The tech guy. Hi.
I listen to you every weekend.
Well, thank you, Betsy.
Sure. My basic situation is that my goal is to want to play online poker and kind of site.
Sure.
Frankly.
You can't play for money anymore in the U.S. You know that, right?
Right, yeah. Right. And that's fine with me. I don't have it, but it's just as much fun when we pretend.
I agree. Well.
And they have a good screen, and you can see the table and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, the best way these days to become a poker pro is to play online. You get more games in faster. You get more experience. You learn quickly.
That's right. My problem, though, is the only thing I don't have anything to do it with. We have time. I live in a senior apartment complex. We have access to Time Warner services, and so which it costs a lot of money because you have to bundle it, basically.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, is there a way to access Skype, possibly?
Use Skype to play poker?
Well, I mean, to access being able to use the internet.
So you don't have internet and you want a cheap or inexpensive way to do it,
right,
without the help of the home.
Well, yeah, without the help of having to go through Time Warner package.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so I don't know how much cheaper it would be, but certainly the cell phone companies offer high-speed internet that you can use, Betsy. Verizon, AT&T, both would give you very good service in your area. You can get an iPad with Verizon or AT&T, and the subscription is roughly $30 a month. It's not cheap,
okay,
but it's cheaper than Time Warner.
Yeah.
I would guess that... you want to check the poker site you want to use. Some of them, like Poker Stars, you have to install software, so that means you need to use a computer. Do you have a computer?
I do, an old
okay.
one, but sure.
So then I would get what's called a MiFi device. So you can go to Verizon. It's a little credit card-sized device. It's actually a Wi-Fi router. It's a Wi-Fi access point. You turn it on. It gets the internet from the Verizon 3G or 4G, and then the computer connects to it like it's a Wi-Fi a device, and it's all yours. Only you can use it. None of those other people can steal your poker.
Okay.
Okay, Betsy? Yeah. Okay. Call Verizon and see what they've got for you.
Yeah, I will.
All good. Right. And, hey, nice to talk to you. I appreciate it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ron in West Hollywood, California. Hi, Ron. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, I have a big one for you.
Oh, good.
I love Petaluma. I'm an old hanger-outer at the Russian River Wineries.
Oh, yeah, we live in the most beautiful part of the world. I love it.
Well, listen, not only do I love Petaluma, I'm thinking about moving from West Hollywood to Petaluma because I'm sick and tired of West Hollywood.
Well, you'll be welcome. There's about the parking's a lot easier here, I can tell you that.
Yeah, well, there isn't any parking here. So
no, I know.
I've got a weird one for you. I broke up with my girlfriend a couple of weeks ago, and then I got some very interesting emails from an ex-director of the FBI.
What do we want to call them?
Spoofing, I suppose. But
well,
anyway,
you think your girlfriend did that? It happens to people all the time, with or without ex-girlfriends.
Well,
it's a pop-up that says, "Warning, you. We've caught you looking at child porn." They want to scare you. So they'll say something very dramatic.
Giving her illegal drugs. Better yet.
Did they mention her by name?
They know her. They know that you were with her yesterday. That's one message.
Wait a minute. It's that direct and personal?
Direct to my email address.
Now, you know that the FBI doesn't do that.
I know the FBI doesn't.
Now, what are they asking you for? Are they asking you for money?
I said, no. Stay the hell away from her, because if you don't, we'll kill you.
This
has been a girlfriend for 3 years. Yeah.
I think it's her new boyfriend is getting after you.
It could be a new boyfriend, or it could be her female roommate. I don't know.
It probably is.
I called the FBI and I said, look, I said, this is what happened. They said, just delete it. I said, fine. If I delete it, then I lose the headers. which I wanted to keep.
Okay, here, I'll just give you some information from a law enforcement perspective. And, of course, I'm not in law enforcement, so take it with a grain of salt. But having some experience with it, if you do get death threats that are credible, if you feel that you are at risk, you should pursue it. You should go to your law enforcement, maybe not the FBI, but you should go to law enforcement. West Hollywood Police, good place to start. You show them these, you say, and this is the key thing, I am in fear of my life. I feel in danger. And they will pursue it. The FBI, they see this all the time, I'm sure. And they're probably right. But if you legitimately fear, Ron, that you are at risk, then you have the right to be protected. And they can actually investigate. You're right about the headers. Headers can be spoofed. Depends how sophisticated whoever this is. If they're very sophisticated, you'll never track down where it's coming from. But the chances are they're not. I wouldn't be surprised if it's her roommate or a new boyfriend. Means they're probably not that sophisticated, and probably those headers are sufficient to track them down. If the originating email sending is not spoofed but is real, then law enforcement can issue a subpoena to the internet service provider with that server and say, who is this? And they're required to comply, and they can knock on their door. And I've used this technique for, I don't want to go into details, but if you feel that these are credible threats, that's the key, and you are in fear of your life or for life or limb, or that this is could be in danger. As soon as they say it, as soon as you get a death threat, you have the right to say, I'm scared. Then law enforcement will respond. But I would start with West Hollywood Police. I would start locally. And you want to find somebody who's sympathetic. We were very lucky. We found a local Petaluma police officer, who was sympathetic, was understanding, pursued it. This was a Twitter incident. He went to Twitter, had to subpoena them, then had to subpoena, once he got from Twitter, the internet address of the posting of the offending tweet. He then had to subpoena the internet service provider. This was in Chicago. He then had to call the local police in Chicago, who then pursued it and went to the person's house, knocked on the door, turned out to be a kid, of course. Kid got in trouble with his dad, and that was that. Most of the time, these things aren't dangerous, but I want to be very clear that if you feel like this is a threat and you're in danger, you must go to the police. You must go to law enforcement. If, on the other hand, you think this is just your ex-girlfriend messing with you, and you really don't think you're in danger, then the FBI's advice might be accurate. Just delete it and move on. You've not been hacked. They probably don't have any access to your system. It's just a threat. And unfortunately, the internet makes it very easy to do that, doesn't it? Colin is in Scotland. Hi, Colin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you, Colin?
I'm good, apart from the horrible, awful weather right now. It's raining.
Isn't it always raining in Scotland? Am I wrong, or isn't it always raining?
Yeah, you're wrong. It's not always raining.
I'm just teasing. I love Scotland. It's a beautiful country. One of the reasons it's so beautiful is because it rains a lot.
Yeah, I haven't been here long. I lived in the States for 10 years. That's where I got to know you.
Wonderful.
Since, 2003, building computers with Patrick Norton on the screensavers.
That's right, Colin. Thank you. I'm so glad you watched.
Yeah. Listen, I've got a question about an application called Evernote. I'm just enrolled, of course, and someone put me onto it. So I've just downloaded it, and I wondered if you had any ideas for tutorials, because everyone has, like, YouTube clips with my five best tips and stuff like that.
Evernote is an amazing, amazing app. It's one of my favorites. I started using it way back in the day when it was created by a Russian programmer as an alternative to Microsoft's OneNote. And the Evernote that we have today was purchased from that Russian programmer and is a wonderful company. I talked to the current CEO, Phil Lyman, maybe a year ago, and he told me that even today, a significant percentage of all Evernote users say, I heard about it from Leo Laporte. That's how much I like Evernote and how much I recommend it. It's a free program that's wonderful. They do have a premium version. I wouldn't get it right away. Use the free version as you get used to it. But what it is a note-taking app, basically. It's pretty straightforward. You can take notes by typing, but you can also take pictures, record audio. Its main advantage is it synchronizes to the cloud where it stores your notes on the web, but also to any other device. And it works on everything. Evernote is available for every mobile device, every desktop device. So your notes are available wherever you go. And I love that. I have thousands of notes in Evernote, and I highly recommend it. But because it's kind of freeform, I mean, I just described everything it does, but it's kind of freeform. And so there are a lot of ways to use it. Some people use it as a to-do list manager. Some people use it to do research for their novels. Lifehacker has some really good... I would search lifehacker.com for Evernote tips. They've been using and recommending tips for Evernote for a long time. In fact, I just saw a great article that just came out on Lifehacker. In fact, somebody in the chat room is linking to it that says, you've been using Evernote all wrong. And since you just got started, I think that's not true for you. But here's why it's actually amazing. It's a really good article. But you'll see many, many articles on Lifehacker. Lifehacker, this is what Lifehacker is all about, is how to use stuff like this. I think Evernote is fantastic. I highly recommend it. Are you worried about it, Colin, or you just want to know how to use it better?
No, I downloaded it a few days ago, but I've got it on my MacBook, my iPad, and my iPhone, and it's, like you say, it syncs on everything. It seems to be, so far, pretty good. So it was just really to get used to using it and trying to find out how to use it properly.
You know, I use it for years to keep track of software serial numbers, and just jot down notes. When I park, I put a note in Evernote because I know I can find it again. I just love it, and I think Lifehacker is a great place to start. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I always get sad in the last segment of the day. Always sad. 8888 Ask Leo. Make a note of that. Actually, you know what? Make a note of the website. That's the best thing. If you only can write down one thing, techguylabs.com. The reason is the phone number's there, the link to the chat room is there, and of course the show notes with links, every link I mention, it's all there, including that link that I just mentioned to the Lifehacker article about Evernote. Evernote is so cool. It's free, evernote.com. You can install it on every device, and I do, and it's a great way of having a synchronized store of information that you can access anytime. Tony Tustin, California is next. Hi, Tony. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Big fan of the show. I listen to you every weekend. I have a question about a Chromecast and Apple TV.
Yes.
I have had Apple TV in my family, and we loved it. We have all Apple products. I was looking at this new Chromecast, and it's like $35.
Yeah, I consider it a complement to Apple TV, not a replacement for.
Okay.
So why use it for Netflix, although the Apple TV is better for Netflix because Apple does its own content management for Netflix, so the quality is better. That's, by the way, a useful tip that I learned recently. If you're on Comcast especially, the Apple TV does the best Netflix, better than Chromecast. Chromecast, though, once you get, if you have a good connection to Netflix, will do 4K, which the Apple TV won't. It'll do very high resolution video. And it's really easy because you control it with your Android or iPhone device.
So you can control the Chromecast with an Apple device?
Yes.
Okay.
So any app that is Chromecast enabled will have a special little button that says, while you're watching, say, YouTube, cast this up to my TV, and then you watch it on your TV. And the neat thing is the Chromecast is getting the data, so you could turn your phone off. The video would continue to play, but the phone has a connection to the Chromecast for pause, for turning up the volume, for rewinding, things like that. I love it. Now, it's $35. That's one of the big advantages. And, of course, the limit is right now it's just a few things. Vivo, the music playing system, Netflix for movies, YouTube and Google Play for rental. But and videos, but more and more apps are adding it all the time. And Google's kind of taken the lid off. They've told people, go ahead and do it. And so I think you're going to see a lot more things. We have our own Chromecast app, thanks to Mark Lane. It's written it on Android, called TwitCast. You can watch. Yeah. So there's a lot of I think Chromecast is growing. Apple TV, they don't overlap that much. I think both are useful.
Okay, so you want to recommend getting a Chromecast for a second TV if I could get an Apple TV?
Right now, the Apple TV is probably more functional, but it's more expensive.
Yeah.
Ultimately, Chromecast could be more functional because everybody and their brother, if they have an app that does video, they're going to support Chromecast.
Okay.
Yeah. If you're in the Google world, if you do Google Play Music, Google Play Movies, Google Play TV shows, Chromecast is great.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I like them both. I have an Apple TV and a Chromecast on most of my TVs because I'm crazy that way. I also have a Roku. Roku, if you had to pick only one, I'd pick Roku.
Does that connect to your cable, right?
It does not. Roku is internet.
Oh, okay. So it's like the Apple TV, but...
Just like the Apple TV. It's what we call a set-top box. Gives you internet, puts internet access on your television, basically, so you can watch internet-based content.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Both have advantages and disadvantages.
Uh-huh, of course.
So I actually think... The best, I don't know, all three. But I'm crazy that way. It's really, there's eight ways I can watch Netflix on one of my TVs, literally. The TV does it, the Roku does it, the Chromecast does it, the Apple TV does it, the Xbox One does it, everything. I can watch Netflix in eight ways from Sunday. But the best quality on Netflix is almost always Apple TV, oddly enough.
Oh, okay. Well, right. that answers my question really well.
Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I didn't answer your question. I gave you 18 more opportunities. Dick D. Bartolo, gizwiz.biz is his website, and that's on Squarespace. Hi, Dick.
Absolutely. How you doing?
He joins us every week. Mad Magazine's maddest writer for five decades.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, by the way, I have Roku, Chromecast, Slingbox, At TV. I don't have a television set.
Boy, you can...
That's going to be my next thing.
You know what's sad? Aereo has had to suspend operations in Salt Lake City because a court there has ruled it's illegal. They sent out a very sad note to people who use Aereo. This is another way to watch TV in Utah, Colorado. The 10th Circuit Court of Appeals has denied Aereo's request to stay an injunction, a preliminary injunction that says they cannot operate in those areas. Aereo's great in where you are, though, in Manhattan.
Yeah, Dr. Mom uses it.
Yeah. So what do you got for us?
I have something. I did it on GizWiz on Wednesday with Chad, and the chat room says Leo has his credit card in his hand.
Wait a minute. Let me get
now.
It out. Okay, go ahead. I wouldn't want to make the chat room wrong.
You're gonna think twice. You know, if you go to my Squarespace thing and just click on Tech Guy Labs, you'll see a picture of it. It's from MWE Lab, and there was a show in town this week. The Luxury Technology Show.
Oh, yeah. I really want this. I saw this on the GizWiz.
Emperor XL chair that has three to five monitors.
Yeah.
You have 5.1 audio. You have LED lighting, light therapy.
Well, you sit in a thing. It looks like you're in some sort of... simulator. It's got screens around you.
Yes, and then there's a touch screen so you can bring your five monitors down to the eye level you like. You can adjust your chair.
Actually, I do want this. but that's because I don't know how much it costs. It's got to be expensive.
Okay. They make a bare bones model, $6,000. The one in the YouTube video that I did, $21,000.
What? Does that include the computer monitors or something?
The monitors and the air purifier system,
in case you were eating burritos, what does it have an air purifier system for?
I have no idea. It has a Bose sound system. Oh. You're sitting on the subwoofer. I mean, since you're sitting on the subwoofer, I don't think you need the vibrating option.
It costs more than a car.
Yes, it does.
Holy moly. What is this called?
That one is called the mid-range one is the Emperor XL. Yeah, the company
is... Because you have to be an emperor to afford it.
Exactly. The company is MWE Lab. And they call them the Scorpion line because from the side they do look like a scorpion.
Yeah,
because
the monitors are hanging over you from a tail.
Yeah, exactly.
And because the sticker price stings.
Oh, well, that's excellent.
That's the other reason.
That's excellent.
Wow. But
well, they
try
to get you in their web.
Wouldn't that look good in the Tech Guy Lab? Can I get a mic attachment? I'm ready to go.
Listen, I bet you could. Wow. I bet you could. You can get wood paneling, pretty much anything.
Really? They'll do wood paneling?
They'll do wood. That one had, I think, walnut panels at the back.
I want this. I do. They're right. Oh, I'm so mad at you.
The chat room knows all.
Don't tell me about this. I'm putting my credit card away and locking it in a safe.
You better.
Dick is at gizwiz.biz. That's a place to go to see show notes about products like this and gadgets he talks about all the time here and on ABC and on his podcast, which he does with Chad Johnson. By the way, Chad is great. That show is such a good show.
We have fun. Yeah, he's great. Yeah,
gizwiz.biz.
Really,
play the What the Heck Is It contest. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Thank you, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.